Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
It might seem crazy. Nothing as hot as the Rodfest fight from Tuesday night's show, but there is a controversial local story. Think of your own high school. Think of the name of your high school, your high school nickname, or the name of your school. Well, Maya Berry, who is, as far as I know, not related to Halle Berry, a senior at James Madison Memorial High School. It's where Sly went to high school. Who else? What other famous Madison? You may be a Memorial High School graduate out there.
A lot of them.
Is your mic? Go ahead. Yeah. This woman wants to change the name of Madison High School because James Madison, the fourth president of the United States, owned slaves. We understand inherited some 100 slaves from his father. And on the Mount Pilgrim Plantation in Virginia. Rolf Lindgren, you've been a longtime advocate of the memory of James Madison, and this really irks you, does it not?
This rankles me.
It rankles
to the
you.
Bone. James Madison wrote the Bill of Rights, so I think we should keep the name in honor of the Bill of Rights. I think this is a disgrace to try to deface the Bill of Rights like this by taking down James Madison's name. Just, they already took away Mount McKinley. Now they want to take away James Madison High School.
Of course, there were no rights for his some 100 slaves, were there? In fairness.
Actually, it wasn't fair, but they did have some rights. They did.
And what were they? Did they have water breaks?
Well, they got...
What? Sorry.
They had one day off for religion.
One day off they had?
One day off.
So better working conditions for slaves.
One of James Madison's slaves was named Paul Jennings,
yes.
And he wrote in 1865 that James Madison was one of the best men that ever lived. That's a direct quote.
Direct quote from
Paul
former
Jennings.
Slave Paul Jennings.
And a slave of James Madison. He was
the personal slave
of James Madison. He was there in the War of 1812 when Dolly Madison saved the portrait of George Washington.
James Madison was.
No, he wasn't there. Dolly Madison and Paul Jennings. He's the one who actually took took it down from the wall. Dolly Madison said, "Get that painting and put it in the cart." Basically.
And then Dolly became
Dolly Madison,
hostess cupcake down the road, didn't she?
You like to talk about Dolly Madison, don't you? Maybe we should do a show on her sometime.
Well, I guess I kind of think of her in terms of sweets.
She was very tall as well.
Was she? Okay.
Yes, but Paul Jennings wrote a book in 1865 called "A Colored Man's Reminiscences of James Madison."
Uh huh. And he liked James.
Oh, yes.
Of course, he wrote this memoir, this book, after James was dead.
That's right.
Now, as we know, so is it your understanding that James Madison couldn't free his slaves because he was in a southern state?
Well, it wasn't a practical option. He was in debt. There were laws against it, and also... Of the slaves on his plantation.
You couldn't free your slaves in a southern
state. Really, because one-third of them were children.
Well, because they wouldn't be free.
One-third of them were children, so what do you get? They need to be supported. Then you had one-third of them were old people or handicapped people.
Yes.
So you can't free them because they wouldn't be able to survive.
No, you can't free them either.
They didn't have welfare back then. And then of the remaining slaves, half were women. And of course, in the 1800s, women weren't really able to make it in the pre-industrial society.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't really a lot of options.
No.
And Madison didn't even want this plantation. His brother Ambrose Madison was supposed to inherit the plantation, but he died in 1793.
Oh, that's too bad.
And James Madison had to take it over because his mother still lived there, and he had to also take care of his mother as well.
Yes.
So he didn't really have a lot of options.
So the bottom line is that your argument is that James was a, well, and I'm being somewhat facetious because, you know, it's been a long time and, you know, how serious can we be? But it was common. People owned slaves. Thomas Jefferson, again, he was from Virginia, right? Also a Virginian. But he was called out by his buddy John Adams as to, you know, wanting to free a slave. So this whole business about not being able to free, of course, they wouldn't have been free in Virginia at all, right? That's the point. They're, yeah, but see, they're not free men.
See, Jefferson was an extravagant spender, but Madison was not. Madison was a conservative spender, and he didn't waste a lot of money. And another thing is that James Madison's stepson went into debt by $50,000, which is a lot of money in the 1830s.
Yeah.
Which is like $5 million today. And James Madison, you know, Dolly Madison bailed him out. So all that money.
Probably from all those cupcakes.
All that money that was used to bail out this imbecilic stepson could have been used to free the slaves. But because of this stepson, his name was Todd Payne. He was a juvenile delinquent.
You said you couldn't free the slaves. If you
well, they went to the, they had to leave the state. I think that was the law within 1 year.
Let's go to the phones, can we? Ralph, you got a person who wants to really weigh in
on
this.
Oh, no.
Gordon? Hello, Gordon.
Hey, Ralphie. How you doing?
Hey, hey, what's going on? Okay, wait. James Madison didn't have any children, though. He didn't have any children.
Key point there, Gordon. You can't get one past Rolf on the James Madison trivia.
Okay, and the other thing is Madison didn't actually profit from the slaves. He actually went into debt on that plantation. Madison went into debt, even though he
had slaves. He had 100 slaves. But of course, he went into debt. So does that
the plantation went into was not productive. It was losing money, and by the time he died,
let's stretch our imagination here, Rolf. He could have assisted in their flight to the north. Okay. He could have done that.
Okay. After he died, one of his slaves led the largest slave escape in the United States history.
Oh.
The escape of the Pearl. 77 slaves got this ship
out.
Called the Pearl. And went down.
Yes, go
went
ahead.
Down the Potomac River 100 miles, and then curved back up the bay up to Delaware or something like that.
Was Paul Jennings involved in that?
He was. It was a co-conspirator.
I see.
Oh. Paul Jennings was already up there, and he was a co-conspirator in the operation.
How long did James Madison own his slaves, Rolf?
James Madison did not own any slaves till 1801. So when he wrote the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers, he was not a slave owner. Many people claim that he was a slave owner. He was not a slave owner until later because his father died and his brother died as well. So he got stuck taking over the plantation, which was not his intention.
Yes, I understand. So you feel, well, first of all, in fairness, a lot of people owned slaves. Didn't, I mean, who besides Jefferson? George Washington, I would imagine?
George Washington. Yeah. And I want to tell you the story of Madison Washington. There was a slave named Madison Washington. In 1839, he escaped from Virginia.
Well,
then in 1840, he came back to Philadelphia and met with an abolitionist.
Yes.
And he said, I want to go back and free my girlfriend from the plantation.
Understandable.
And the abolitionist, you better not do that, Madison, because you know, he get caught, and
right.
And he insisted. So Madison Washington went back and tried to free his wife, and then he was caught. So then the owners of this plantation took Madison Washington and his wife and some other slaves and sold them into the South, which was considered a bad thing.
Yes, of course.
But then Madison Washington escaped, hijacked the boat, escaped again, and went to an island in the Caribbean Sea and lived happily ever after and was never heard from again.
Oh, wow.
And here's the kicker. modern researchers have went through all the records to find who Madison Washington was, and there's no record of any slave being named Madison Washington. So you know what that means?
What?
Madison Washington was a fake name, and he named himself after the two greatest heroes for liberty, James Madison and George Washington.
Just not for their slaves, but that's a cheap shot.
So this is an indication of what black people thought about James Madison and George Washington. That's why there's so many people of color in the United States today who have the last names of Washington, Madison, Jefferson, Jackson, Monroe.
All right, the serious question we should ask ourselves is, should Memorial High School change its name because James Madison named, which was the basis for the name of Madison Memorial High School, because he owned slaves? 210-1667, 210-1667. I may get off this pretty soon because it could be that, you know, no one cares. But a senior cares. By the way, it's a serious part of our history, which we don't celebrate, Rolf, as you, I'm sure, would concede. It's not a good thing.
But we can celebrate the Bill of Rights.
But slavery is not something we celebrate.
I know, but James Madison wrote the Bill of Rights. So taking his name away would be like degrading the Bill of Rights.
Well, right? I suppose that's one way to look at it.
Well, that's the way I look at it. People who go to court and use the Bill of Rights to protect their liberty in court.
But John Adams supported the Bill of Rights. He didn't own slaves.
Did John M. Drew, well, he didn't have anything to do with writing the Bill of Rights. John Adams didn't.
He didn't even advise.
No,
he chopped liver? Passed,
he voted for the Alien and Sedition Acts, which violated.
I know he did, but we're talking about before that, Rolf. We'll come back with more. I don't mean to get my friend upset here, but...
Even though you did.
I can't help myself. It's the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
For nearly two decades, Troy Research has been measuring attitudes and opinions for our clients worldwide. Success is determined by your customers. What do they know that you don't? Ask them. For Sony Motion Pictures, the Green Bay Packers, the Wisconsin Historical Society, Troy Research has asked questions that made decision makers wiser and more successful. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884. Or email jlittle@troyresearch.com.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, will cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
The great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak at 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com, BucksPizzaMadison.com.
As life celebrations bring people together, you'll be comforted knowing we have community rooms available for those who wish to serve food and refreshments before, during, or after your gathering. This is Pete Gunderson. We're here to assist with every detail. Learn more at GundersonFH.com. Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson. Harrison Funeral Home.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Before we get to the Liz and Donald Trump getting out of the Paris Climate Accords, there's a study, a survey by a financial website, 24/7 Wall Street, researching cities around the country and researching the drunkest cities in the country. Number of bars per capita and driving deaths involving alcohol determine the drunkest and driest cities in the U.S. It looks like Wisconsin dominates. Of course, I used to live in Green Bay. The drunkest city in the country, according to the survey, is Green Bay, Wisconsin. I feel like the old Richard Dawson. Survey says Green Bay. And I tell you what, when I first moved to Green Bay, I was coming from South Bend, Indiana, which was a good drinking city. A lot of Catholics liked to drink in those days, and it was a big diocese, and Notre Dame was there, and Irish, the whole thing. Ethnic city, you know, I lived above a Belgian hardware store where Rich Vandeputty still spoke fluent Belgium with his friends in the hardware store. Across from the West End Bakery, owned by more Belgians. And there were Italian sections and Polish sections, you know, South Bend, Mishawaka. Anyway, but Wisconsin, when I first moved to Green Bay, there'd be these little villages outside Green Bay, like Angelica. Does anybody know Green Bay out there in Facebook land? And Angelica must have had like 20 people, but they had like 7 bars. I mean, it was a Shawano, Bonduelle, these little places on the way to the western part of the state. It was incredible. So I thought, well, in Wisconsin, in northern Wisconsin, you don't find bars, they find you. The second drunkest city in the country is Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Does it surprise you at all, Ralph?
No. It's a college town, isn't it?
It is, yes. So is Green Bay, but that's not the reason Green Bay is. The third drunkest city in the country is Appleton, Wisconsin. Wisconsin, the top three. 1, 2, 3.
Terrible.
Huh?
And 4.
Well, and what's the fourth drunkest city in the country?
We can only imagine.
Madison, Wisconsin.
Named after James Madison.
That's true.
Are they going to change the name
of slave owner
Madison,
James
Wisconsin?
Madison.
All the things named Madison.
Can we call him Jimmy?
Jimmy. They called him Little Jimmy.
They didn't call him Jimmy.
Some people did.
Jimmy.
Well, some people called him Little Jimmy.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm
just a nickname.
The
you know.
The fifth drunkest city. We finally go outside Wisconsin, Fargo, North Dakota, and the sixth drunkest city in this country is Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So five. Of the six drunkest cities in the country are in Wisconsin. And also, Wausau is ninth and La Crosse is 10th. You've got what? Now, wait a minute. Okay, so you have seven of 10. Seven of the top 10. Wait, how about that?
Jeepers.
I mean, isn't that amazing?
Isn't that because beer companies were founded here?
Yeah, the breweries, for
like
sure.
Like Pabst and Schlitz and all that.
You know, they also had in Shawano, Wisconsin, when I first, they had these parties, and raw hamburger was a dish you would see at parties. Raw hamburger. People would put it on crackers and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, because I guess that's okay to eat,
right?
Right,
yeah.
As opposed to raw pork, which would be bad.
Yeah,
bad. People eat raw fish. But they would have raw hamburger, just put it on your cracker at these parties. I couldn't believe it. There was a place in Green Bay, Ashwaubenon, right in the by the Lambeau Field, called Kroll's. Have you been to Kroll's, Ralph? They had like the butter cheeseburgers and stuff, you know, and cheese curds and all that typical Green Bay type place. Famous older place. But you get a gin and tonic at lunch. I mean, it's not just they had beer at lunch, you know. They had gin and tonic, and you could get like a vodka tonic. I mean, at noon, people were ordering. I was amazed. So, yeah, there is kind of a deep-seated culture here.
Miller, I think, was from Wisconsin, too. So
Miller?
Miller Beer.
Miller Beer? If you've got the time, we've got the beer.
I mean, Milwaukee was called the beer capital of the world, so that's probably the reason why. It's just a remnant of.
Is this
of
for like accident. The slaves? It's is this part of our history?
It's an accident of history. They had to have it somewhere.
It's certainly a prideful.
And
thing.
Remember, a long time ago, beer was considered safe because water would often be spoiled and you could get sick from diseases. So people
good
drank
point,
beer
yeah.
because yeah. it would kill the germs and the, I think and
you
the
should,
liquid.
You should have been a lawyer, I think. Now let's get to, how about let's get Donald Trump now on the getting out of the Paris Accord. Which was not binding, apparently, but it was, you know, people agreed to it, even though a lot of countries hadn't ratified it yet, who said they were for it. Even Russia said they were for it, but they didn't ratify it. And the only two countries that just didn't say they were for it were Venezuela and Nicaragua. But here's Donald Trump talking today in the Rose Garden about getting out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. Thank you. But begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States, its businesses, its workers, its people, its taxpayers. So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine.
So Donald Trump claiming and had all kinds of data to throw out there about jobs. We'd lose as many jobs, as many by 2030 or 2040. The one stat he threw out there that I thought was interesting, he said that if China would violate the agreement for 14 days or do what they do for 14 days, it would negate all of the U.S. compliance with the agreement through 2030. How do they come up with an assertion
that? We know that the communist countries are the worst polluters. Take a look at the Aral Sea on the map. You heard of the Aral Sea? One of the biggest inland bodies of water in the world.
Which is where?
It's in Russia something,
okay.
Or Kazakhstan.
As opposed to
former communist area, it's almost nothing.
Is that
it's
by the Ural Mountains?
The Aral Sea, A-R-A-L.
A-R-A-L.
The Aral Sea. Aral Sea. That's what communism does to the environment.
I see.
Take a look at the Aral Sea.
The Aral
Sea. Look at the 1960 version compared to the 2010 version.
Not a good place for pollution.
Not a success. If you're a fish, it's a bad place.
Oh, I wish I were a fish. Remember Don Knotts and the Incredible Mr. Limpet. Anyway. So Trump is doing this, and of course he'll be besieged 24/7 in the media for causing climate change. But they were arguing that even by 2100, if everybody complied perfectly with the Paris Accord, we would be only 0.2 degrees Celsius warmer. Which, if you're in the islands, somewhere, it might be important, but. And they were saying that they had provisions where India and even Europe and China, they could do all this other stuff, and we had to, you can argue about it, but the point of it is, I do know this, and don't get mad at me. Well, you can get mad at me if you want. In 1980, I saw Barry Commoner speak, who was a leading environmentalist at the time, and he ran for president in 1980 in the Green Party. Dave Teslevich admitted on my show that he voted for him at that point in his young life. He said Orlando would have a beach by 1995, so he missed on that. Ted Danson from the show Cheers in 1986 said we had 10 years to clean up the oceans. So all I'm saying is a lot of these deadlines that were given back in the 80s and 90s, we're off a bit.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that we're not getting warmer, which we are. I mean, you could say we are.
How come the Northwest Passage hasn't opened up yet then? You know how much money that would save the world?
Passage?
Yeah, or across Canada, the top of Canada. Like, we have the Panama Canal, and you go around the tip of South America. If you want to go from the Atlantic to the Pacific or vice versa,
The Northwest Passage?
Yeah, it's a passage north of Canada.
North of Canada.
To get from the Atlantic Ocean.
Too much ice?
Yeah.
It's still got too much ice.
That's right.
And that's your barometer?
Well, if it's not open, that means the Earth must not be getting much warmer. And if it did get open, it would save a lot of money.
And it's important to think about. But I will say that we are cleaner than a lot of these other countries in the mix. And so I guess one of the complaints is that we would be hurting ourselves, and we're cleaner than other countries that would be in the agreement. And we can argue about it all we want, but I wish we all would endorse renewable energy as much as we can, all that good stuff. But if we're going to be screwed and other countries get away with murder, then I'm not for that. So call me nutty, call me crazy. Throw your darts at me. I promise I won't spray aerosol can in the atmosphere, as my friend Doug Moe would say he did to try to provide global warming to play golf longer. I think it was a joke he would tell years ago. But I won't do that, Rolf. But, I basically don't want to be screwed over either if somebody else is going to be worse than we are. Is that reasonable?
I'm pretty sure that,
is that, reasonable?
That China and
China
India,
is worse than we are. And so is
probably Russia.
You know, the whole thing.
All those big countries over there.
Mike Ciandella coming up, one of my favorite Italians, talking about how the media has ignored the story in Venezuela. You know, in years past, when things would, the Iron Curtain would come down and Ceausescu was shot in Romania when the whole Iron Curtain, remember that, Rolf?
Oh, yeah.
We had massive coverage.
Ceausescu. Berlin.
But here we have Venezuela, riots, people shot in the streets, the whole thing, and nobody covers it.
I didn't even hear about it.
Yeah, no. Mike Ciandella will tell us all about it. I mean, next on the Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down to discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Hague.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Hague. How big or how small a case will you take on?
I've helped all sorts of people over the years, from very small cases up to multi-million dollar cases. We do try to be selective in the cases that we handle as a matter of economics and devoting the proper time that I can to a case. We do advise some people that if their case is small enough, they may be better off handling it themselves. Not everyone needs a lawyer. Sometimes it's not in their best interest to have a lawyer, and I've told many people over the years that your case is of modest enough value that I think you're better off handling this yourself. So it's only when we think we can make a meaningful difference in the outcome for them that we're willing to accept their case.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're back, and as we said, I mean, all these famous things in history that happen, countries that fall, Poland with Lech Wałęsa back in the day, and Romania, Bulgaria, I mean, the whole nine yards with the Germany. Big coverage. Of course, it was a big deal, the Berlin Wall. But now we have Venezuela, where they're rioting and shooting people on the streets and people throwing bricks, and they can't get food and the whole thing, and nobody covers it. Mike Ciandella joins us from the Media Research Center. Hello, Mike.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Sure, aren't you the pride of Penn State? I'm trying to get you straight with somebody else, but maybe not.
No, you're thinking of Curtis.
Curtis.
I hail from New Jersey.
New Jersey. Not a Rutgers Scarlet Knight, though.
No, my sister was, though.
Oh, I see. Well, anyway, so what's the deal? Tell us, how severe are things in Venezuela?
Things are really bad in Venezuela. Just in this latest round of protests, and this has been going on for decades now down there, there have been 50 people killed just in this latest round of protests against the government. The government is really cracking down hard. There was a report that came out, one of the few reports that came out not too long ago, so that it's now common for children to be on the street digging through garbage to find food for their family.
Oh, so food's an issue. Food. That'd be a good way to lose weight. You can go to Venezuela.
They're running out of toilet paper. It's just basic necessity.
Right. Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, so what's the government's explanation? I mean, I've heard people say on shows, well, they got some oil problems, or they're being targeted by, sanctioning countries. I've heard some lines about this. I mean, what is your take on why things are falling apart?
There's always someone else to blame, but when it comes down to it, the problem is socialism. The country is sitting on one of the biggest oil reserves, not just in the Americas, but in the world. I mean, even compared to the Middle East, it's one of the biggest oil reserves.
Yeah, they got a lot of oil.
They should be just rolling in cash. But because of the way the government is set up, because of
were they doing better under Hugo Chavez in terms of feeding the people, or did the slide start then?
Huh? It was bad under that, too. When I looked at this study, I started with the death of Chavez for the reason that when he died, he had such a cult of personality. People thought maybe with the cult of personality, socialist leader out of the way, things can start to mend. We can start to move back to a more open society. But it seems like it's definitely gotten worse since then. So bad before, it wasn't a good to bad situation. It was bad to even worse.
So Venezuela is not going through. How about this terrorist attack in the Philippines? And of course, they have a tyrannical regime there that's been under scrutiny, but that's a different ballgame. In Venezuela, we have reaction to simple food shortages, which you could blame on the economic system. I mean, there were meatless Tuesdays, right? Meatless Mondays in Russia for a period back in the day under Stalin. You know, I guess you couldn't complain about it because he'd be sent to a gulag. But, I mean, here, they'll just shoot you as well, won't they, Mike?
Yeah, no, it's in bad shape. I mean, you have we take for granted, I think, a lot of times that people protest Obama, people are protesting Trump all the time now. But then all these people are able to go home, they're able to live their normal
lives. Well, yeah, we don't usually shoot them on the street. I mean,
well, yeah.
Knock on wood, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, Trump.
Not quite yet.
Otherwise, Trump would have his militias hit the studios of MSNBC and CNN. Don't you think of that?
But the thing with us in this country, if he did that, we wouldn't. I mean, even conservatives wouldn't stand for an armed put down.
No,
radical speech because we. That's one of the things we appreciate in this country. But
what are they going to send that? Although that one guy,
who's
that guy that assists Steve Bannon? Is it Stephen Miller? Is that the young guy with the receding hairline and the big Adam's apple? That guy. I mean, he might.
He might do it.
Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller.
He's the one guy I wouldn't want out in front of the tank. But I don't think Reince Priebus would do it, no.
Can I ask a question?
We've got our friend Ralph Lindgren in studio. Go ahead, Ralph.
I have a question for the guest.
Yes.
Do you know what the gross national product per capita is in Venezuela compared to the U.S.?
Off the top of my head, I do not.
Well, okay, because, Ralph, you're trying to make a point about economics.
I was just curious of, you know, how poor it really is over there. But
so why can't they make the money off the oil? I mean, I don't get that. I mean, I realize they have some.
They are making money off oil. It just depends which. If you look at the gross national product, might skew it because it just depends who they are. The government, Maduro's regime, is making money off of the oil reserves. Not as much as he probably could if he had a free economy going. But the money isn't going down to the people. So,
well, distribution problem. You know, that's what we talk about even with Democratic Socialists like Bernie, because he supported a 52% top income tax rate. But the money that you would gather would go to the government, and then so the government then would have to pass out the goodies, you know, which I guess in Bernie's world would be free college and all this, but how do you trust him? I mean, the money wouldn't be a check to your home. It would go to the government. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the biggest problems with this coverage is not only have they not covered the situation at all, they're not calling it socialist. ABC World News Tonight hasn't called it socialist at all since Chavez died over five.
They don't use the S word when they do stories about. You know, it's kind of like the Seth Rich, and I got slammed on Twitter because I mentioned the guy that got shot in the back. But when the people do the stories saying that story was debunked and Fox retracted it and Sean Hannity might be fired. Nobody ever mentions in those stories about the fact that the robbers didn't take his wallet. I mean, it just doesn't show up in stories. So you're saying similar in the Venezuela story, nobody's saying it's a socialist government. Whereas
even though socialism is the crux of the issue, the crux of the problem, the other networks weren't any better, really. CBS mentioned it once. NBC mentioned it six times. I mean, this is over the course of more than 5 years. But I think a lot of that comes, they don't associate the actuality of socialism, which is what we're seeing in Venezuela right now, with the idealized pie-in-the-sky version that people like Bernie Sanders are pushing.
Bernie, yeah, well.
What about other industries? Do they have, like, fishing and tourism over down there?
Well, tourism's not doing that great right now either. They do have fishing. They have some.
Tourism can't be going
like
well.
That.
People being shot in the street, rummaging around dumpsters for food. Come to Caracas. What was that story with? I mean, it's not going to happen. Chamber of Commerce. You could go to the Chamber of Commerce in Caracas, Ralph.
Well, the way the economy is set up, it doesn't matter what resources they find, what goods and services they have, as long as the regime is this oppressive. It's not going to go. And I mean, you had just a few years back, what went unreported was they had blackouts caused by the ineptness of Maduro's regime over 70% of the country. So it doesn't matter what industry you have if you don't have any electricity.
Well, you just can't win, can you, Mike? I mean, you live in an oligarchy like Mexico, and 1% have all this money, and the rest of them come over here illegally. And then you have socialist countries where you can't get food. I mean, you just can't win. You know, how do we find a democratic capitalist country where we have a rising tide lifting all boats? Well, you know, isn't that the goal?
Yeah, well, and you think people would be able to look at the world and see places like okay, this is how socialism works in Venezuela in practice. This is how communism worked in Cuba and Russia and Vietnam, and realize that these might not be practices we actually want to keep pushing here in the United States.
No, well, I wouldn't exactly compare us to Venezuela, would we, Mike? I mean, we're not...
Not quite yet.
I wouldn't think so.
But it should still be a warning for people trying to push a socialist agenda here.
Okay, Mike, thank you so much for the update on that. Appreciate it very much. Bill Cosby, thank you so much, Mike. Media Research Center, go to newsbusters.org. I always like to hear them. They stir the pot. Well, I've had Media Matters on, too, and they do the same thing. By the way, I'm going to talk about that, about the socialist point. And I've had arguments with people at work over the years about whether a football coach should make $5 million a year. My good buddy Shaq, you know Shaq, right?
Oh, yeah, Shaq.
And he doesn't think a football coach should make $5 million a year against the coach of Michigan or Alabama. I'm thinking, well, why not? They're not paid by the taxpayers, right? They're not paid by tech. Come back with that. And also Bill Cosby, blaming the fact that he's drugging these women, he would, you know, I guess it's rape. You call it rape, wouldn't you? I mean, if you're drugging a woman to have sex, I might call
that rape.
It's rape. And he said, well, if white people did this, nobody would care. I mean, give me a break. And this is the Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do? Maybe you got a birthday coming up. You want to get the family together? Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to madisoncomedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. We book the best comics from Late Night, from Conan O'Brien, from Comedy Central.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to madisoncomedyclub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. madisoncomedy.com or 256-0099.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rail.
One thing that we really appreciated about Tim was his knowledge of the real estate market. Fair prices, what was asking too much, and he knew about development, who the builders were and what their strengths were.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rail of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
Tim is a very fun guy, and it was a very enjoyable process.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
The all-new Mitch Hank Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience, working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
6 AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6 AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6 AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6 AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6 AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6 AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to The Mitch Hank Show.
You know, my sister mentioned this last time I saw her, because she's into this kind of stuff more than I'm. Well, she's into the politics and stuff too, but in this Washington Post story, in a rare interview, Bill Cosby said he does not expect to testify at his upcoming felony sexual assault trial, that he believes racism played a role in the scandal that has engulfed his life. During a 30-minute conversation with SiriusXM host Michael Smirkanish, the 79-year-old entertainer portrays himself as a victim of the media and of accusers who were piling on. Cosby has been accused of sexual misdeeds by at least 60 women, cited a feminist author saying Gloria Steinem had a very interesting quote. She said, "The truth shall set you free, but first it might piss you off." Cosby's interview is part of a rollout of orchestrated media appearances in advance of the start of jury selection, which came days later, in his trial on charges of drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand, a former Temple University women's basketball official, in 2004. One of Cosby's attorneys, Angela Argusa, who is based in L.A., recently told The Hollywood Reporter that she hopes to change the optics of Cosby's presumed guilt and hinted that she may use a theory of false memory creation to undercut his accuser's credibility. Earlier this week, two of Cosby's daughters, Anessa and Erin, provided tape statements to the Breakfast Club, a nationally syndicated radio program, about hip-hop music, culture, and politics. "My father and family have had to endure these last few years, making me ashamed of our country," said the daughters. Okay, asked about the racism allegation, Bill Cosby said, "Could be. I just truly believe that some of it may very well be that." Cosby did not respond when asked to reconcile the racism claims with the fact that some of the accusers are black. I mean, so there's a buzz coming out of Cosby's plight that he's saying, well, you know, this were white people. Nobody would care.
Wasn't he a big TV star?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so didn't the media help him then?
Well, yeah.
Okay, so he's accusing the media, but he was made by the media.
Well, I mean.
And how long did these TV executives know about this and cover it up? How long did he get away with this?
Well, I don't know if they knew. I don't know if they knew.
With all the stuff,
drugging the women.
With all the stuff that
women knew they were drugged.
I know, but none of the, there were complaints that were filed years ago, and nothing was done.
Well, true.
It's a cover.
It says
up.
Here, Cosby, "I decided I think it's time for me to do something so that people who still have faith in me, the people who are still wondering what I sound like as opposed to the National Enquirer, which is very interesting reading when they write about me," Cosby said, explaining the decision to do the interview. I mean, he's accused by 60 women. I realize you have to be proven guilty, Rolf. But,
yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Give me a break. It's just not okay, right? I mean,
it's,
are all the women lying? Are they all lying? Are they? I know you got to prove the individual cases in court, but to me, the suggestion that racism is behind.
I wouldn't be surprised if there are
some of the women are
embellished testimony, but
African American women. I mean,
yeah.
How can you say it's or imply that it's racism?
Well, I don't think it's racism at all, because if it was racism, how did he become a TV star in the first place?
Well, he got an Emmy in '68 for I Spy with Robert Culp, and said then, I saw his little clip of the speech, "I hope this proves that the bigots and the racists should mean nothing or be irrelevant or whatever." I mean, Bill was always a forerunner in going after negative stereotypes of people of color. Obviously, his show in the 80s depicted an upper middle class black family as a doctor. I mean, he hated the whole negative stereotype of people of color. You know, he just and resented the idea that if he had a suit on or wore a tie, that he was somehow trying to act white. Bill was very upset about that over the years. But again, this whole thing with women and drugging them is very, very disturbing and very dark.
Darren Sharper got convicted of that, the former Packer. Did you know that?
Of drugging a woman?
Yes. Darren Sharper.
Well, didn't the guy, the kid at some campus, was it on the West Coast? It was his father was trying to minimize the sentence. I mean, I haven't talked to my daughter about that with her friends. I mean, there's a student at, I don't know, Stanford or something like that, where he drugged a girl and, you know, essentially raped her, and of course did rape her, and his father wanted, and the sentence was light. And it was an outrageous story, I remember. But again, I just think...
I guess I wonder why how a big TV star like that can't, he can't get a date.
He's married, for God. I mean, of course he's married. I mean, he has these daughters.
I mean, weren't there a lot of women after him? I mean, why did he
obviously
have to do all that?
The defense is going to claim that, you know, this each accuser is wrong, but well, if you have 60 accusers...
See, the legal case against him is kind of weak, though, because they had to find one case that's not with after the statute of limitations.
I understand.
So the one case that they have may not be the strongest case.
Yeah. Now, let's see. One of the daughters said, quote, "I believe that racism has played a big role in all aspects of this scandal. My father is being punished by society that still believes black men rape white women, but passes off as boys will be boys when white men are accused."
I don't think anybody would pass these allegations off as boys.
Boys
will be boys.
I mean, give me a break. I just find that very disturbing. But again, we will leave this topic on the table for now. Rolf, we appreciate you coming in.
I had a great time, Mitch.
And I know you believe that Memorial High School should remain that.
James Madison Memorial High School in Madison, Wisconsin.
Should remain. Although I got to confess, when I go to a basketball game there, or, you know, over the years, I've sort of seen it as Memorial High School.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you do say Madison Memorial because it's in Madison.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is named after.
They have a big plaque of James Madison.
No, I'm sure they do, but I don't always say James Madison Memorial High School.
What about Madison Square Garden? Should they change the name of that too?
I'm not suggesting it, Ralph.
What about Madison Avenue?
What about
Madison County? There's a lot of
Madison County.
The bridges of Madison County. Did you see that one?
That was where Clint Eastwood had the affair with, was it Meryl Streep?
I think so. Yeah. I can't remember.
Right.
It was a book,
too. And women at work loved the movie, if I recall. And, you know, and somehow that was seen as such a nice thing. I mean, she was, her husband was gone. And, you know, this love affair happened.
There's a lot of things named
Nobody
Madison.
Said, you know.
There's a lot of things named Madison, so if you want to try to change strip Madison from the annals of history, there's a lot of work to do.
Yes, well.
A lot of businesses named Madison.
You know what? We've
this
stopped
Madison,
doing the
Matt.
Madison story, Ralph. It was in the last segment, but I appreciate it very much.
Okay, I appreciate it too.
All right. We've got the disruptors coming up, and we'll tell you what they're going to disrupt coming up on the Mid-Chang Show on MadisonTalks.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary.
You're listening to The Mitch Hanks Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hanks.
All All right. Ralph has gone on to his, the rest of his life. We've got two disruptors in our presence trying to disrupt the workplace, right? I mean, in a positive way. And, well, hello. How are you? Good to see you again.
How are you?
Again,
Thank you for having us. I'm excited to be here.
And I had to pull the email up with your name. So just give me, both of you, hello again. And your name is first.
Laura Geminder.
Laura Geminder. Now, you're with what organization, by the way?
I started my own business called Laura Geminder Coaching and Consulting.
Oh, good. Can you coach me? I need some coaching.
Yep.
And you can, you know, save us from the abyss. And your colleague who's got a laptop going on.
She's
here.
All business over there.
And refresh me again on...
Corrine Woodman Hollebeck, or just call me Corrine Hollebeck.
Corrine Hollebeck. Are you part of the same business?
We are and we aren't.
You are, and you are not.
Yes.
We got a few things going on here, Mitch.
Yeah, we're also going to fix this mic, which I see a tape, and the actual, you know, jack is like, can't reach the mixer. Is that, there's got to be a reason for that. We're going to fix it during the break. But you're both in cahoots on the same campaign, Corrine and Laura, in disrupting the workplace. Because people, what, work in jobs they hate and... should be thinking about branching out and starting a new, throw those on, would you?
Sure thing.
We'll do that. We'll get all set up during the break here, but because you are technically a 6 o'clock guest, but we're getting a jump on it, and I apologize for that on the names. Normally I would have been much more prepared. But again, about people not being happy with work and leaving and getting started in their own business, is that the gist?
Or just knowing that there's something more, that the workplace, what we're doing now isn't working.
Your existing work can be better.
Or the companies, the structures, the way that they're run, the leadership.
So if you hate your job, well, not hate, but you know, you like your job, you're not fulfilled with your job, you can make it better.
Be more.
You can make, even if you stay in the job and stay as an employee.
Yes.
You can make it more.
Yes.
I want to deal with this topic because it applies to all of us. Whether you're a fledgling business like us or you work for somebody else. The Disruptors, when we come back, The Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.